Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
And welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. The number here to reach us is 1-888-815-9756. This is a live edition of the gathering, an afterlife discussion group. We welcome your calls. Please call in, join in, and if you have anything to offer about the topic, and maybe we can learn from you. Tonight's topic is concerning ancient civilizations and what they knew about the afterlife and how we might learn from them. And we have our regular panel here, Tom and Melissa Gould. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and we have Fran Ginsberg. So we have a nice cozy group, and we're going to get started real quick. Tonight's sponsor is
L&R Productions.
L&R Productions, and you can find them on the web at lnrproductions.com. Let's get some business out of the way, and then we could get
I just thought that if the three of us were really quiet, you would sound foolish on the air.
Oh, you mean like for the whole hour?
Yeah.
that would be like an April Fool's thing.
Okay, not April. All right, well, as we know, with these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items in one of their 800-plus online stores, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop and show us that you care. We also have our Holidays Past raffle, another way you can show us that you care. And you can win one of 5 medium readings with Bobby Allison, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Anlo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, or Kathy Towle. It's $5 a chance. You can get your chances on the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And speaking of Holidays Past, we have our annual Holidays Past events. We have 3 of them this year. The first one comes up on December 4th at the Best Western Berkshire Inn in Bethel, Connecticut, with Angelina Diana and Dave Kane. The second one comes up on Saturday, December 11th at the Hilton Woodbridge in Iselin, New Jersey, with Janet Nohavik. And on Saturday, December 18th, at the Melville Marriott in Melville, New York, with Angelina Diana. And that's it for me.
Okay. And it's a little late, but it's still possible to make a reservation for the conference, which is next week.
And I took quite a few reservations today, so it is limited seating. You got to get your reservations in, because once we pack up and we go down there, we're not going to be able to take reservations over the phone anymore.
Right. And it's nice to get away to Florida for a few days anyways.
Oh, yeah. Particularly Fort Myers.
So we have a few minutes before the break, and I know we're going to be talking about the afterlife. I think it's clear that all the civilizations that preceded us incorporated death into their lives more so than we do today. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the archaeologists uncovered the burial sites from 50,000 years ago, showing that people made elaborate arrangements after death. They buried people, you know, with flowers and with belongings, because they believed that they just took the next step. And, you know, you often wonder, you know, a lot of people, I mean, there's a natural tendency for people to believe in the afterlife. So that's what I read. People say that it's sort of built in. They say, well, you know, it's built into our genes, you know. But yeah, I mean, I question that. You know, why? I mean, why would Neanderthal man think that we survived our death? They didn't have any evidence of that, you know, and yet there's evidence, you know, that even they, you know, believed in an afterlife. So, I mean, do you think it's something that that we're born with?
Well, you said that they had no evidence, but maybe they did, because maybe just those around them reappeared to them.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. So the point is, maybe it's not a natural tendency. Maybe they were communicating in ways that we are just beginning to learn.
Maybe it's just natural.
Yeah, just the way it is.
It's as natural as it is for newborn babies. I mean, we've already established that in other discussions that we've had, is that when a child is first born, they appear to focus on things that we're not seeing in the room. And as they get older, you hear more and more stories, and you hear them more frequently these days, of 3, 4, 5-year-olds having conversations with grandpas and grandpas that were deceased before they were even born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, well, what's interesting is when we've all read about the shamans, you know, certain people in a lot of the Native American cultures, African cultures, even in Siberia, you know, they all have, you know, shamans who were pretty much, you know, leaders in the community and developed this ability where at will, you know, they could visit the spirit world. And what's interesting when you read about these communities is that, you know, they all believe that their ancestors remained a part of the community, that the ancestors were there to give guidance. And people regularly, if they couldn't do it, the shamans did it, when they needed some answers, they went and got the answers. You know, isn't that, you think one day we'll get back to communities, we'll have shamans, modern-day shamans? There are modern-day shamans, obviously.
I think we're in great need of some modern-day shamans, some old-day shamans.
Yeah, I mean, and Robert Hansen does that very thing on his supposed TV show that he tried to launch. He was the psychic judge.
Oh.
I saw the first episode of that, and families would come with disputes on what their loved one's past had in mind for them, and they'd ask Robert Hansen, and he'd go and ask. So it's very similar to that.
Yeah.
Well, the there's quite a bit of evidence, you know, from the both the Greek and the Egyptian cultures, and when we come back from break, maybe we could touch on that a bit. I mean, the pyramids themselves are fascinating because, in essence, they were, you know, giant tombs, you know. So,
yeah.
So certainly that culture believed in life after death. So we're going to go to our quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion of the afterlife, ancient civilizations, and what it means to us. So stay with us.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At L&R Productions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. L&R Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.lndrproductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Did you know that there is an abundance of scientific evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife? You now have an opportunity to learn about this evidence firsthand at Forever Family Foundation's conference in Fort Myers, Florida, November 13th and 14th. If you have suffered the loss of a loved one, or are simply curious about what happens after we die, don't miss this chance to see scientists and certified mediums share their knowledge and insights in lectures, workshops, and demonstrations, including small group medium readings. Call 631-425-7707 or visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to Signs of Life Radio. The number here is 1-888-815-9756, and this is The Gathering, and we're talking about ancient civilizations and the afterlife. You know what's interesting is that these early civilizations, they not only integrated death into their lives, but they wrote manuals, right? We the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Mayans wrote, you know, a Book of the Dead. So like, if those were written to prepare people, both prepare people and let people know, you know, sort of what to expect. So,
well, the Mayans have us getting ready to expect something. We just don't know what yet.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that these texts were not merely, you know, folklore, you know, and religious speculations, but they were based upon direct experience. They were people that experienced the other side and were writing about it. So, I don't recall reading any modern-day manuals. I guess you find them in some of the channeled, you know, writings. But, you know, sometimes I think I'd rather live back in the real old days, you know. And we talked about that in the past, about whether some of these, going back to, like, the Aborigines, you know, whether or not they communicated without language, you know, just through telepathy and how we've seemed to have lost that art as we became industrialized. Mm-hmm. What's it going to take to move us, you know, back to develop these powers again?
Thinking about becoming industrialized, there was a program once, and there probably is a lot written about it, that about the UFO, the alien involvement in the pyramids, some of the hieroglyphics, if that's what they call all the art, I don't know if that's the term for all the art that appears in some of the tombs, show people holding what looks like high-tech weaponry or tools that nobody can account for. And I don't know if you've seen any of this yourselves, but the way those pyramids were built, I don't know. I started to buy into the whole theory, like, yeah, how did they build those? You know, how?
Yeah.
Without the help of some other force.
One of the wonders of the world.
I think what's the most interesting about it is, you know, why they were built on the specific sites that they were built on. You know, I mean, the quarries for the stones might have been a mile away, and these were talking about massive things that you'd need cranes for today. And then they would move them miles to a specific site. And the answer generally given is because they knew about, this life force energy that seemed to be on these, like what they call ley lines or certain energy lines, you know, in the earth that not only enabled things like telepathy and healing, but also formed a basis for communicating with spirit. So they were put in, like, Stonehenge, and all these sacred sites were built in a very specific spot for specific reasons, you know. So
one in Ireland, the Newgrange, that Tom and I had visited, was the same thing, and it had the light shaft coming in at a certain time. Solstice, I think, it aligned with.
Did you ever visit?
We saw something like that in Sedona, where the light was coming through a rock formation, and the hieroglyphics that would be lit up with the light would tell them when to plant what crops.
Hmm.
Wow, it's fascinating.
Yeah, you talk about stuff on the pyramid walls, also on the temple walls in ancient Greek civilizations. You know, you see these depictions of bodily figures, and then what appears to be them leaving their body, you know, like a near-death experience, you know, and so that's also kind of interesting, you know, how they you know, I know what you were talking about, they seem to depict things that look like UFOs, and there's also a lot of depictions of them, you know, leaving their body, and I know recently it was the archaeologists uncovered they called it a doorway or a gateway to the afterlife, and it was like a massive door that was on one of these ancient, you know, burial sites. And when they uncovered it, it was a series of doorways, like a doorway within a doorway within a doorway, as if you open one door and you move into the next door, you know. You know, that I thought that
well, wouldn't that be indicative of many dimensions then?
Yeah.
Which is what quantum physics is trying to point us towards now.
You know, I have to think, you're right, Bob, saying, you know, industrialization took us further away from, I would say, simpler times when more time could be devoted to looking into or understanding or connecting with. However, also, without all the technology we have, it was a real challenge just every day-to-day life, staying alive, getting food, preparing food, building shelter, staying warm. So that does take a lot of time. But I guess, as we all know, when you mow the lawn, that gives you plenty of time to think, lots of time to think, because everything, you know, you've got that hum of the mower. So maybe it's like that as they go about their chores. They can tune in more because what they're doing is sort of physical, but their minds are
like
free.
It's a meditation, right?
Yeah, but now what's happening is with today's technology, you have headphones on, earbuds in constantly. So there's constant noise, constant stuff going into your head. There is no downtime at all.
Right.
Even if you're mowing the grass, you've got that in there, and there's no time to think. There's no time for your mind to separate from its brain.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I was thinking about it, that today's world, there's just too much noise. You're not able to hear the messages that are coming through. I think about, we live close to two major airports, actually three if you count to MacArthur. We're right in the center between three different airports. And there are planes going overhead, you know, four, five, six times a day. I don't ever hear them, you know, unless you're just out in the hammock or something. You look up and there's a jet going over. But they're going over all the time. And that's a jet airplane, and you're not hearing that, or at least I'm not hearing that. I dare to say that most people on Long Island don't even notice those planes going over. And it's that way for the messages that are supposedly coming through for our ancestors to talking to us. Is they're not getting through just because of the noise. Another thing that jumps to mind is people who have seen signs of their loved ones, a lot of the time it comes in through electronical means, that the phone will ring, lights will blink, things like that. The electricity will act oddly, and yet the machines that are being fed by this electricity are fine on checking. And I think that maybe in the days before electricity, spirit was able to get to the earth and to the people a lot easier, whereas now they're probably getting sucked into a wire somewhere and not able to manifest. And we saw, as you say, evidence of things. If you look into literature, what jumps to mind, I know that Shakespeare wrote about Hamlet's father walking the parapets and delivering a message, and of course everybody knows about Charles Dickens and his Christmas Carol with the ghosts that visit Scrooge during the night. And going back to the ancient civilizations with the pyramids, where the pharaohs would actually, you know, their tomb was a home for with their stuff in it for when they came off the other side. So it's it's something that's there. I think the noise of civilization has crimped it, and then of course the politics of civilization has severely crimped it. There was an effort to squash thought and science and all that sort of thing. You know, people burned at the stake for thinking that the Earth revolved around the sun and not the other way around.
A lot of great minds were either put to death or tortured because of they had the audacity to come up with theories that today are taken as the gospel, but then were it was pure heresy. You know, we had on Raymond Moody a few weeks ago. We were talking about near-death experiences, and in his latest book, I read something that was real interesting because he wanted to show some of the parallels between how, you know, all ancient cultures also believed in near-death experiences. And in the ancient Greek civilization, the cult of, it's Osiris. What they used to do is they used to take slaves and volunteers and they used to put them in coffins and suffocate them to the point of death. And, you know, just before they died, they would pop them out of the coffins and then they would, the priests and the wise people would debrief them, and they want to know about all these experiences that they had. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
They're not doing this at the university.
Well, they tried to do that in Flatliners, right?
Yeah,
but maybe that's where they got that from. But that's pretty interesting. So, you know, we think of that as a new concept, but, that's certainly not a new concept. So, you know, people were experimenting with that. There are so many things that the ancients, whether we're talking about technology or whether, these deep thoughts that, we tend to think that we invented them, and, you know, we're just, history's repeating, you know.
Mm-hmm. Even when we spoke at our afterlife discussion group last week about the physical mediumship, those were things, parlor activities. And it was an ancient civilization, but it was certainly generations before us, and that was quite common.
Right, and it's just a few generations before us, so it's still having been passed down from grandmothers or great-grandmothers, and we're still doubting it. And yet, when the people who were at our afterlife discussion group, who actually participated in one of these sessions, reported what was going on there, that was real,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And here you've got millions of people out there that are just by the book saying, no, can't be, can't be, can't be. They won't even walk in the door and say, you know what, maybe it can, so let me try it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of these ancient people, you know, had this knowledge. We've talked about the difference between knowledge, you know, and belief, you know, and I think these people truly had, like you said, it's normal to them. This is the way it was, and they there was no question. They knew that there was an afterlife, or they knew that we had this vital life force that didn't extinguish, you know. And today, I think that a lot of people, whether it's based upon their religious teachings or education or societal influences, they'll tell, if you ask them, the majority will say, yes, I believe in an afterlife. But it's not quite the same. Their belief, I think, is based upon hope, and their belief is based upon faith. They want there to be an afterlife, but they're kind of on the fence a little bit. They want to see the evidence, you know, and I think that's what the difference is, you know. And today, I mean, that's one of the things that the foundation tries to do, is present the evidence to the people that are sort of walking that line on and trying to turn that hope and faith into belief. But for the ancients, I don't think they had that that problem. And I know very few of them were on Prozac.
That's because they didn't have the TV commercials sending you to ask your doctor if it's all right to take it.
Yeah. Well, I just keep, you know, kicking around. I just can't. I'm trying to wrap my head around, you know, why the earliest man would believe in in an afterlife, because I just don't buy it that it's just a natural tendency. You know?
I don't think it's a natural tendency. I think it was part of everyday life. You went out to the field, you took care of whatever you were growing, you brought back your food, and there was quiet time. There was quiet time incorporated into everything. You see it in some religions. I mean, the Muslims pray how many times a day? Four times a day? More?
More,
no,
I think.
That's for a reason. That's not just because somebody said pray this many times a day. That came up through the sages, through the ages, and said you got to be in contact with the bigger thing. Mm-hmm. And this is the way to do it, a quiet time. You know, and then somebody crazy decided to organize religion and say, okay, we have enough of this crazy quiet time during the day. Let's all do it on one day a week. You know, and then you get this, so what you have is this organized religion that's made it, canned it so well that you don't have to be in contact.
Yeah.
And so it's totally lost.
What about, I'm sorry, Tom.
No, well, I was going to share an anecdote about what is natural and what is perceived. And I go back a month ago when my mother passed, and we were with her when that happened. And I had promised my mom that I would see her through this whole ordeal. And, part of me was curious, and yet another part of me, I guess from my upbringing, death was something for horror movies. It was a horrible thing that you would be shocked at, and that sort of thing. And I was, I wanted to be there for my mom, but I was there was something in the back of my head saying, "Boy, this is going to be horrible." And when she actually passed, I was struck with just how natural it was, and how peaceful and gentle it was, and I was just taken aback and said, "Whoa, that was." It didn't seem horrible or fantastic or spectacular or shocking. It just seemed like, oh, that's the way it is. That's life. And I think that that's indicative of a lot of what we're talking about, is that we have these notions that have been drummed into our heads from all these different avenues, and we, our preconceived notions get in the way of natural existence in
right.
a lot of ways.
Yeah, and also, the ancient people didn't ship their elders off to
nursing homes,
to die, and death wasn't something that was avoided. You know, it was embraced, and people, it was always in a family. People were surrounded by family and friends, and
which is, by the way, where the word parlor comes from. You know, we just think it's another name for living room, but that was where you set the person who was getting ready to pass over so they can receive visitors. And
that's true, right in the home.
Yeah.
I wonder what Tom just said, you know, it's not on our topic, but when we all are told that we have the ability to talk to spirit or reach spirit, and I think the way Tom viewed death as it being sort of a momentous event that would be, I don't know, terror-filled or something bigger than what it actually turned out to be. And I think that when we can talk to spirit or reach spirit, I know at least in my mind, I'm thinking it's supposed to be some big wow, aha moment, like, oh my goodness, I just did that, rather than it just being just another thought. And it's like, it's so natural. It's nothing big or striking. It's just natural. So the way death was natural.
Yeah, we've lost the community concept, you know, so we've talked about in the past that certain communities would have like dream cultures, you know, everybody was told to dream, or they didn't have to be told, it just was a natural thing, everybody would dream, and then each morning they would all sit around together and they would share their dreams and they'd find commonalities and they would use that for guidance and what to do for the community, you know, so it's an interesting concept, you know, why aren't there more, you know, shamans today? Is it because we don't have more communities? Is it because of there are so many more distractions, you know? Is it harder for spirit to get through? You know, was it easier for spirit to get through in ancient times than it is now? Could be a lot of different things. Like Tom mentioned, it could be something, if there is some sort of an energy, and maybe an energy that we're not aware of, maybe that energy is disrupted by all the, you know, electromagnetic disruptions and the power lines and everything else, you know. So,
but I think Tom was really on the nose there with the analogy with the electronics. If their energy, and they can't get through to us, to our energy, then electronic devices are the next best thing, and we have plenty of those.
Yeah.
And so that would explain why it has become so simple for them to turn on and off lights, for them to move the mouse on your computer for you. They've got it all under control. It's all figured out.
And before, to get your attention, they had to, like, move a massive club, right? Now they...
Put that boulder over.
That's right. There weren't lights to turn on and off. But the stereo to blast. Yeah.
Well, and while you get the things like birds being assigned, because birds are not—they're not thinking about things; they just get thoughts into their head. It's easier to put a thought into a bird's head and have the bird actually act on it, rather than a human who will get a thought in their head and then they'll shake their head and go, "What am I thinking that for? That's silly," and then moving on, or "Why did I think of that?" Or this is, or the big one is, "Oh, what a coincidence." And everything's a coincidence, and you just dismiss it, and you move on with your own thought-filled conscious life.
Yeah, what's interesting is that all these ancient civilizations, they all believed in a life force that permeated the physical world and the non-physical world, and they all had different names for it. You know, they called it prana, maya. You know, Claude Swanson's new book, Life Force, he goes into this stuff in depth, and lo and behold, today, you know, modern science is doing experiments with the same life force. It's exactly the same thing that existed thousands of years ago. It's just, we may be calling it in quantum terms now, but it's still the same, you know, prana, you know, going on. We talked about that experiment that was done with Qigong masters, mm-hmm. and with cancer cells. From 2,000 miles away, these masters were able to direct this prana or ka, whatever you want to call it, and to not only heal cells, but he'll pick out, you know, the cancer cells, specific cancer cells from the control group, you know, and fine tune it, and, you know, with significant results. So they knew a lot about these life forces. So they knew about life forces to heal things. They knew about life forces for where to build things, and they also knew about how to harness it to communicate with those not in the physical. And I think, you know, that's where science is going, and that's what Claude is talking about with the scientific revolution. And when we finally reach it, we'll finally reach a point where we know what the ancients knew.
I mean, let's just talk about, we'll probably go to a commercial break soon, but the crop circles.
Yeah.
When you go to those crop circles, it's the same thing as what you question, oh, who put the pyramid there? It was impossible to build something so heavy. But isn't it impossible for all of that crop to lay down simultaneously in these beautiful patterns? It's the same thing. It's a force. And when you go to these crop circles afterwards, you can measure the force that's there, the energy that's there. And you could do the same thing, and it's been done with the pyramids, particularly, and I believe it was Dr. Robert Schock, measuring it when the pyramid had been moved from its original site. And on its new site, the energy was no longer there. The energy was still on the original site. So there's something here about this life force that will hold the answer to everything we're looking for.
And with that, I guess we'll go for a short break. And when we come back, we will continue to talk about what the ancients knew and we don't. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Did you know that there is an abundance of scientific evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife? You now have an opportunity to learn about this evidence firsthand at Forever Family Foundation's conference in Fort Myers, Florida, November 13th and 14th. If you have suffered the loss of a loved one, or are simply curious about what happens after we die, don't miss this chance to see scientists and certified mediums share their knowledge and insights in lectures, workshops, and demonstrations, including small group medium readings. Call 631-425-7707 or visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back. The number here at Signs of Life Radio is 1-888-815-9756. And we're talking about the afterlife as usual, and we're talking about ancient civilizations. I went on the internet and I was trying to, I don't want to sound like I'm obsessed with that question, but I was just trying to find out, why people, what are the common reasons given why people believe, in the afterlife, and why, the ancients. So the internet had a lot of interesting information, like when you talk about some of the Greek and Roman cultures and some of the Native American ones, they lived in the desert. So the theory was that everything was dry in the desert, so that a desert climate meant that things, they didn't decay, but they were preserved, like in mummies, sort of. And that since it was preserved, that then people believed that you could bring them back to life, So that was one theory, which I wasn't buying, but it seemed logical, because, it's like you add water and then to bring them back to life. So I didn't buy that. The other one, we talked about a little bit, that it was, people claim it's a natural tendency for people to believe, in the afterlife. Another reason is that, and that's something that we've talked about before, about common sense observation, that the energy never dies, right? It seems logical to a lot of people that it has to go somewhere. So, that's where it's going. That makes, I think that's a valid reason why people, it's one of the reasons we believe, that there's an afterlife, and that, the energy, or call it consciousness, and human consciousness goes somewhere, so it's going to another dimension. A lot of people, another reason that was given was that it's just simply impossible for human beings to comprehend the fact that they get extinguished, which is, that's a valid reason, a lot of people, they either can't comprehend it, or I think a lot more people refuse to accept it. They just, logically they think that they're not open to a lot of evidence, and they just feel that there's no possible way when you're dead your mind can continue, and they just refuse to believe that. So in effect, their refusal to believe it leads them to believe that there is an afterlife. So I don't know if you subscribe to any of those theories, but that was those were the top three or four that I could that were given. So I don't buy the desert one at all. But
oh, no?
Well, I buy the physics one. That's what made me take the first steps down this path of the spiritual awakening because of that, the energy cannot be created or destroyed. So yes, it goes somewhere. And as Fran pointed out before, that's that's basic physics. But now we have quantum physics, which I think scientifically, as Claude Swanson will tell you, and as Fran was alluding to before, quantum physics is where we actually are going to get the answers for this. And it's very exciting. It's a new science that mankind is just discovering, and I think there are a lot of answers to be held there.
Yeah. You know, the fact that the all these ancient burial sites show that they were buried with belongings, you know, with food and with weapons. And so so at first glance you say, well, that's because they believe that they're taking all those things, you know, with them. So, in essence, what did they believe? That it was an integration between, you know, the material things. They believe it wasn't just a world your consciousness goes, but if you're the way that you prepare for death is to have material possessions. It's kind of a weird way of thinking, right? We think in terms of an afterlife, being that your soul and your consciousness continues, and you give up all your material. You're giving up your physical body, and you're giving up all material things mean nothing. But yet, somehow in their culture, you ease the way, or you had a better life if you, you know, when you say you can't take it with you, they believe you could take it with you.
Well, it just shows you they as much as they knew, they still didn't have all the answers.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at the religion back then of the Romans and then the Norse and the Greeks of that there was a Mount Olympus where, you know, the gods were and that, but somebody like Hercules, who did his tasks, when he passed over, he got to sit with the gods. And I guess that's where the idea that you'd need your sword and your shield because, you know Achilles, well, Achilles wasn't a god, but some of the...
He's a heel.
some of the gods... You know, appeared in warrior outfits and that, so that you would need that sort of thing if you were going to go and hobnob up on Mount Olympus.
Right, and well, even the sheer height of the pyramids. I know that one foot the specific shape, built to mathematical preciseness, harnessed energy to a certain degree. But just when you look at it, the sheer height of it, they believe you were closer to heaven, because there were no skyscrapers then. The higher you went, heaven was just above us, so they were halfway there.
That's right.
Who knows much about the pyramids? Are there rooms underneath? Is it hollow throughout? Is it just underground?
Well, both. There's most of it is hollow, but there are chambers, and there are
multi-level.
And there's underground. Chambers, mm-hmm. which are uncovered now by archaeologists, and supposedly, when the mystics would go all the way up to the top, because that's where the energy was harnessed, where it came to that point, and that's where communication with other dimensions was easier because of the.
You're saying up to the top on the inside.
On the inside.
Cool.
So, and what we, you mentioned Dr. Schock, and, he was part of an expedition, I think, where they were searching for what was under the paw of the Sphinx. And to see, and a lot of people, including Dr. Schock, believe that there's a great potential for doing research, in the pyramids because they were built, as we were talking about before, on specific sites that a lot of these phenomena we talk about as being paranormal are very prevalent in those things. And if you could bring in some of these so-called ghost hunting apparatus, mm-hmm. And the things that measure all different types of energy, and a lot of people report strange physical occurrences in the pyramids. I know that there are a lot of meditation groups and meditation. They have great experiences while they're there, but some are affected negatively by the energy as well. So, I'd love to be able to participate in some of those experiments in there because I believe it. Not only the telepathic abilities could be increased, but we talk about psychomantiums here and these sensory deprivation chambers where you can make contact with the dead easier. Well, imagine in the pyramid, it, and I think they must have used the pyramids to communicate with their ancestors.
You know, you mentioned the psychomanthians, and you make me think, because that also was a creation of ancient times. That was the ancient Greeks
right. That
built those structures specifically for communicating with those who had already gone before them. And here we are trying to duplicate it here in the United States, but has anybody researched the fact that maybe those, just like the pyramids, were built on particular sites,
that
the energy had to be on those sites in order for it to work?
Mm. Yeah, I don't think anybody's done. I mean, they used to be in caves, you know, where those were the original, you know, psychomanthiums. They used to be, you know, dug out of caves.
Well, that beautiful presentation that Dr. Raymond Moody did had them being built mostly into the ground. They were structures that were built mostly into the ground, and specifically because there was no need for light. It was supposed to be dark.
That sensory deprivation would be...
Well, that's the way we look at it now, and that was what Dr. Raymond Moody brought back from studying them, was that it was sensory deprivation. But I'm posing that maybe it wasn't sensory deprivation as much as it was the energy force that was in the building at the site.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, what jumps to mind is the Oracle of Delphi.
Right.
And not necessarily the Oracle, but Delphi, that's the important.
Yeah, well, you know, that the concept of sensory deprivation, you know, then it would lead one to believe that it's hallucinatory, you know, because you're starving yourself, you're in complete darkness for an extended period of time, that these are, you know, it's the same kind of arguments that are used unsuccessfully about to explain near-death experiences, you know. So, but people do, you know, get into these deep meditative states in different ways. And, I mean, the data seems to show that these psychomanthians overall do enable not necessarily seeing or talking to a deceased loved one, but sense of presence, flashes, shadows, things of that nature. You know, so I guess you could at a first glance you can make an argument that it's just a, you know, imagination, but then that's why these studies are going on. When you have, you know, you put many hundreds or thousands of people through the same process and you find a consistency in the data, you can make certain assumptions.
So if we thought of this when the miners were trapped, we could have said, stop your rescue for a week or so. We have some experiments we'd like to do.
Yeah.
I'm sure this stuff Well,
what they had going for them there is at least is that they had a community, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had people to help each other. They were helping each other, and I guess it would have been a lot different than Tom Hanks in a cave, you know,
basketball.
Yeah.
Volleyball, come on.
Oh, it's a volleyball, sorry.
And the miners, I mean, they had Elvis, so, you know.
Elvis?
Oh, yeah. You hadn't heard that? The miner who's going to be running in the New York City Marathon, he was the one who, when they were down there, he requested Elvis music.
Oh.
To be sent down.
I thought he was doing impressions.
No.
Oh, I thought maybe Elvis made an appearance.
Well,
it wouldn't be the first Elvis sighting. Unusual.
There's another energy. Again, it comes up music. Music is a huge energy that raises people's insides to great heights. I mean, just think of even when you're just watching a movie that has gospel music in it. I mean, it moves you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and what they've said about Mozart for children, you know, learning, there's a real connection there as well.
Yeah. And I think that music has to do with, I'm convinced it has to do with, a resonance. You know, and that's why music, different people like different kind of music, you know, you resonate in more than just a semantics. I mean, in a physical, scientific sense, you know, you reach a frequency that enables you to soar or to communicate or whatever. You're in the zone, the same way that the runner gets in the zone and the artist gets in the zone, and the writer gets in the zone. So, Yeah, and that's another thing that's nothing new. I mean, the ancient philosophers talked about, you know, the same thing. So, there's so much wisdom that we can learn, and the truly insightful people, I think, realize that, and they always making statements to the fact that I don't know, you know, I got it from somewhere, but I don't know where I got it. But they recognize that. You know, they set their ego aside. It's easy to say, "Oh yeah, I sat and I composed this." And but you write music. I mean, yeah. Lots of times, you know, don't you wonder where it came from?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I look back at songs that I've written and I'm thinking, "How did I do that?" And Pete Townsend of The Who is extremely spiritual, and exactly what you just said. He attributes all of his writing to having come from somewhere else, and the fact that he has surrendered to it and given in and said, yes, I'm going to basically go with the flow, is why he's been so successful for so many years.
And I wonder, with all the mediumship that, you know, we're familiar with and all the people that come through, very rarely do you have somebody come through, let's say, from an ancient ancestor, right? I mean, and I guess logically how would that ancient ancestor prove, give you any evidence? Like, what's the point? Because how could he or she or the entity give you anything that you could, like the medium, you can identify with it when he gives you something about your uncle, mm-hmm. or your aunt or your family member? But that would be interesting, you know, when how come your 3,000-year-old uncle, or Mel Brooks, doesn't come through, you know.
Well, certainly I've been in readings where, not necessarily ancestors, but my grandmother, for one, who I may have met when I was 5 years old, but I knew nothing about, came through in a reading. And it's like, well, it's nice to hear from you, but I have no way of knowing it is you.
Right.
But they do come through. And,
Well, that brings other concepts into play, you know, because you were talking about, you know, souls and reincarnation, you know, so part of your soul remains and part of your soul reincarnates over many different civilizations and generations. So who you're really communicating with?
Mm-hmm. Well, and if we ever do get into our Seth discussions that we talked about earlier, was that he maintains it all happens at once. That
right.
your past life, your this current life, and your future lives are all happening now. It's just that your consciousness is focused on this one.
And and then there's a lot of interest in, you know, parallel universes. So we could be having this same conversation slightly differently at the same time in another dimension right now.
I probably are.
I can't even wrap my mind around that.
You know what? When you read the actual transcripts from Seth,
mm-hmm.
not that we're going into the Seth discussion now, but
well,
when you read the actual transcript, they make sense.
Yeah.
They do make sense, and you can wrap your head around the way
right.
he phrases it.
Right.
Because he's doing it, he's giving you the information
you.
He wants you to know about
right.
the other dimension.
Right. And he does every once in a while stop and say, you know, I could describe this to you, but you just couldn't understand it.
Right.
You
well,
don't have the capacity for it.
I think I can accept it just a teens if I think that the other dimension, a lot of people talk about the other side or it's someplace else. But if we can all really believe that it's right around us, so it's that energy is right here with
yeah.
us. Our loved ones are right here. So the Seth stuff can make a little more sense.
It could be just a slightly different frequency and a little different plane. And
mm-hmm.
it's all layers, you know.
But again, going back to quantum, it's funny because the Seth material is from the 60s.
Yeah.
And quantum physics is now explaining exactly what Seth already told us.
Well, that settles it. Melissa and I are going to have to read up on Seth so we could join these two.
Yeah.
Because I think that may be the topic of our next gathering, if we can talk about
And any of our listeners right now, then they can call in with their...
If you've read about, yeah, we
yeah.
could use the... Seth
Speaks is the book.
And the woman who channels Seth is...
Jane Roberts.
Jane Roberts, right. Rothbart, Seth calls her.
Right, and she partnered with her husband in the 60s. It's quite an interesting story, the way it even started was she had written a, I believe it was a fiction book, and her publisher was waiting for the next book, and, you know, she just grabbed, I think ESP was hot in the 60s, and she just put that out there as a proposal, thinking he'd say, go away, and they said, wow, great idea, write a book.
Oh.
You know, and I did get the discs, which I can lend you if you'd like, and I feel that it's better to read the, as you say, when you read the text, it's better. When you listen to it, it's not so clear.
I don't know. Melissa and I may not have time. We may have to listen to those discs.
Okay, well
maybe what we want to do if we do the Seth material is to get some key phrases out of the transcripts, put them up on the website, maybe some on Facebook, and then have people read them before we start chatting.
Well, we've given everybody a homework assignment, so please help us and pick up a copy of Seth Speaks so we can talk about it in the next gathering next month. And I'd like to thank everybody for joining us on this edition of The Gathering. Friend, are you currently reading your prayer for the Gulf?
I am, and unless something happens to BP and they leave the face of the earth, I'm going to keep reading this.
Okay.
Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, corals, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And that was by Masaru Emoto on May 9th, 2010, just a little while after the Gulf spilled.
And with that, it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
My name is George.